Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from the award-winning RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Dave Williams. Good to have your company. Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the 16th of May, and on this very special edition of Tech Talk, we'll be having a fireside chat from accessibility experts led by RNIB's very own inclusive design manager, Robin Spinks. More about that later. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's our opportunity to get together each week and explore the world of accessible technology. What's on your mind? What's grabbing your attention? What's even frustrating you? We'd love to hear from you. So drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. On the show this week, we'll also be learning about the range of Orcam products available through RNIB's Products for Life store and catching up with some of your listener email as well. So stick around, it's another Tech Talk. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich. Good to have you both here. Let's come to each of you and find out what's grabbing your attention this week. Hubert, what's happening in your world?
For me, it's a bit of a personal highlight. I'm actually getting into modern smart home technology. I'm getting a Hive installed very soon in my house, which I'm quite excited about at the moment. That's something that recently has kind of gained my attention.
Nothing to do with bees?
No, not a smart beehive yet. Although, if it becomes available, then hey, you never know.
There we are. So what are you getting specifically? Do you know?
I'm getting a heating system specifically, so something to kind of control our heating a bit more, because our current system is on the brink. So we thought let's upgrade things a little bit. I don't know too much about it yet. The chap that I've spoken to kind of told me a bit more, but yeah, I'm looking forward to all of it happening. I've never had something like that before. I've never had something that allows me to control the heating independently, to be fair, with accessible means. So it'll be quite an interesting step into enhancing the accessibility of my home, to be fair, which I'm quite excited about.
We have Hive. We didn't have to change the entire heating system. There's basically three components: a box that connects to the router, the thermostat in the hallway, and then a controller, I think, that connects to the boiler. And this means that using smart speakers or the Hive app on the phone, or even on Apple Watch, Hubert, you can set the heating, find out what's the temperature and all that stuff. And crucially, during the winter, you can set the heating to switch on before you get home. So it's lovely and toasty when you get in. So let us know how that goes. I thought you were going to be telling us you were buying a new iPad.
No. I mean, it's all nice and thin. It's all nice and thin. Everything's thinner. And everything is, as we discussed a few weeks ago on Tech Talk. But yeah, everything is much thinner is the only other highlight I've seen from the event. So yeah, and if you want a thinner iPad and you've got spare cash, yeah, go for it.
Well, the thing that grabbed my attention with the iPad stuff was that Apple talked about how the camera on the iPad was designed to recognize documents. So obviously a mainstream application for somebody using an iPad, just using the native camera app, they would be able to scan a document. And of course, this is something that we as blind people do a lot, using apps on our devices. So it'll be interesting to learn more about what that experience feels like when it gets into everybody's hands. Callum, what's happening with you?
Well, Sonos has grabbed my attention this week for all the wrong reasons, unfortunately. So I've got a bunch of Sonos speakers all over my my house. And for a long time, for years, the Sonos app has been really nice and really accessible. One of the most accessible apps I've used, I think. But they have released an update earlier this week at the time of recording this. This may have changed by the time you hear this, because once again, it's one of those fast-moving stories. But they have released an update, which is a redesign of the app, a new look and feel. And that always brings a bit of anxiety for us, because is it going to be accessible? And in this case, it really isn't, unfortunately.
Yeah, lots of people doing some advocacy around this to try and make Sonos aware of the issues before release, but they went ahead and released it anyway. Like you, Callum, I've got Sonos speakers and have found the app to be accessible, and I did manage to switch off automatic updates just in time. But what's that? What does that new app sound like?
Well, I have been playing around with it, and this is what I've heard so far. It's hard to even know where to begin with this, to be honest. So if we go into the app, the first thing we've got is a screenshot, apparently.
Screenshot. Screenshot.
Okay, so that doesn't tell us much. Flick in to the right all the way through this, and you'll see why in a minute.
Your system. Button.
That button doesn't seem to do anything.
Account settings. Button. System settings. Button. Recently played. Button.
So you got recently played. It announces it as a button, but I think it should be a heading, really.
View all. Button. RNIB Connect Radio. Live station. From Sonos Radio. Button. Black Radio 1. Live station. From BBC Sounds. BBC Radio 5 Sports Extra.
That's fair enough. They're all my recently played. And then if we flick to the right through all of these.
D. Callum's. Pure. Deluxe. Your Service. Manage. Button. Your Services. Button.
So then there's Your Services, and that's where I can go into like Apple Music or Sonos Radio or BBC Sounds and view the specific things to that service. But there's no way to jump through these. There's no headings or anything. When you actually go to play something, there's no way of controlling where it's going to play to. So you click play and it just starts playing from somewhere. I haven't figured out how you change that yet. So for me, if I try and play something from this screen, it seems to start playing in the living room very loudly as well. And I don't know why. Trying to go through your speakers, which used to be at the bottom, or it used to be in the system tab, which is where you could find all your speakers and what they were playing. That's now just at the very bottom of the screen. And it's a bit painful to navigate. So if I go to the very bottom of the screen with the forefinger single tap near the bottom.
Volume small, image.
Volume small, that's volume small, is actually the full label of that. But obviously it doesn't read it as that. I'll flick to the left.
Volume small, image.
I don't know what that is.
Play, button. Speakers, button. Space. Music, image. No title. Office.
Okay, so this is my office that we're looking at. So that's what those volume buttons were. The button that said speakers, that's where you can set groups. So you could say, you know, if I wanted the same thing to play in the office and the dining room, I could click that speakers button and then select or deselect certain rooms to play it in. But that's not very clear. Again, flick to the left to go to the next room.
Volume small, image. Volume small, image. BBC Radio 5 Sports Extra. BBC Radio 5 Sports Extra.
So 5 Sports Extra is playing.
Play, button.
Or was playing somewhere.
Speakers, button. Music, image. Indian Premier League cricket. Dining room.
Ah, so that's the dining room. This is just, this is so hard to navigate. And you might be thinking, well, yeah, that sounds like a lot of swiping, but I'm sure it could be a lot easier if you explore by touch. That's what I thought when I started using this. And it's a good way of thinking, but yeah, let's try that. I'm just going to tap my finger somewhere on the screen.
Screenshot.
Now I'm dragging my finger around, but as you can hear,
100% battery power. Screenshot.
We're not getting anything. We can get the status bars at the top, but if we tap anywhere in the main app,
screenshot, screenshot, screenshot.
All we've got is that screenshot element. So the only way you can get around is by flicking. And, I mean, it's just a mess, frankly.
Okay, well, it sounds like there's still quite a bit to do. And if you are one of the people who has been affected by this, do let Sonos know. They need to hear from us. If your app is less accessible than it once was, please do notify Sonos. And keep us informed. Let us know about your experiences. And have you had this with any other apps, smart home or otherwise, where you've been merrily going along, enjoying your day with your accessible product, and then suddenly, boom, it stops working for you? We'd like to know about that as well. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, thanks a lot. Settle in. It's another Tech Talk. The 16th of May 2024 is Global Accessibility Awareness Day, an opportunity for those of us with a disability and those who haven't to come together and spread awareness of accessibility, inclusion, and how we can make the world a more accessible and inviting place for those of us who are blind or partially sighted or perhaps have another disability. And we've assembled a little bit of a panel to discuss some issues around accessibility and inclusion. So joining us, we have Robin Spinks, who is RNIB's inclusive design lead. We also are joined by Sven Costa from Go Media and Lisa Johnson from Starship Robots. I'm going to come to each of you, and I'd just like you to start, if you would, by telling listeners about some recent work that your organisation has been doing to make the world a more accessible place for blind and partially sighted people. Robin, let's come to you first. What's happening in the inclusive design team, RNIB?
Hey, Dave. Well, in the inclusive design team, we've got an incredible range of expertise and skills. And actually, right now, we're engaged in activities that are incredibly diverse, from working with a leading television manufacturer to make the next year's range of TVs the best example of accessibility. We've also been working with the Bank of England on note accessibility. We're working across the chip and pin payment industry with lots of vendors there to make chip and pin, our new generation chip and pin terminals, more accessible. And of course, travel and transport. We've been doing a lot of work to build accessibility in to travel and transport systems. Most recent example being the ferries across Scotland and the islands. We've been working with the national ferry operator there to audit all of the ports and all of the vessels. And, you know, really that's just a snapshot of stuff that we're working on at the moment. Lots of exciting new things happening. But you know what it's all about is opening up possibilities. It's all about giving people more equitable access. Because you and I know, Dave, that when you're out and about and you're trying to use transport systems, products and services, it's a real lottery as to whether something's going to work for us as a visually impaired person. So we want to change that. We want to try and build the perfect country for people with sight loss and create products and facilities and infrastructure that really make a difference for people every day. So it's super exciting.
One of RNIB's partners who is working on making access to travel and transport more accessible is Go Media, and we're joined by Sven. Sven, tell us a bit about yourself and your organisation and some recent work that you've been involved in that is making the world a more accessible place for those of us who are blind or partially sighted.
Right, thanks, Dave. Yeah, we work closely, especially with Robin, on several projects around the public transport industry, not only in the UK, but around the world, to make it a more accessible place. The last project we've done with the RNIB is around Docklands Light Railway, to make four of their stations accessible, utilising Netherlands codes. And then not only blind and partially sighted people, but everyone could make use of this technology to identify their way around the station environment, use live journey information to identify the right platforms, and then in that way, navigate independent around the station environment. And then another project we're working on at the moment is with London Overground to bring the station announcements to your own device as well. So you can access the station announcements to your own device, knowing the latest announcements that have been played, having a log overview or a historic overview of the previous made announcements. And then if you would be a person that is more familiar with British Sign Language, you can get all that information in British Sign Language as well.
And Lisa Johnson from Starship Technology, Starship Robots, in fact, you're taking a slightly different approach to accessibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Delighted to be here, Dave, as always. So yeah, a few of the things that we've been working on. Well, I guess firstly, what I'll just do is I'll just describe what we do in case people don't know. So Starship Technologies, we have a few thousand little robots that deliver people's top-up shopping and food. And they do that by traveling on the pavements across the US, the UK, Estonia, Finland, Germany, and Denmark. And so obviously we're quite sensitive to the fact that if we're operating on the pavement, we do need to put accessibility at the heart of what we do. So we have an accessibility advisory panel, of which the RNIB and Robin are members, that kind of try to help us get this right. So it puts lived experience really at the heart of our engineering and our autonomous driving priorities. So a bit of work that we're really passionate about, but it's a little bit of a slow burn because it's pretty hard to do, is that we're working on teaching our robots what canes look like. So if they can understand what a cane is and they can see it from a distance, then robot behavior can be different and can be more sensitive. So for example, we've had people from RNIB said, well, guys, we just want to know the robot's there. Now you've explained what it is, it sounds great, but how do we know it's there? So that's one of the things we're working on, is our autonomous driving team, along with RNIB, are manufacturing different meetings of robots with cane users, because the robots need to see things a number of times before they understand what it is. So we're making those meetings so the robots meet cane users and see how canes move. Then hopefully once that's done, we'll be able to tell the robots, okay, you've identified a cane, now you need to announce that you're there. Let people know that there's a Starship robot. And it'll just be as simple as a little message that says, hi, I'm a Starship robot, and I just want to let you know that I'm right here in front of you, so that cane users will know that. So that's a big piece of work that we're doing around actually how we operate, but also at the same time, we're about to also take a look at our app in terms of making sure that not just our operations are great for people who are around us on the pavement, but also that it's as accessible as possible for people who want to use our service.
We're also joined by RNIB Tech Talk co-host Callum Stoneman. Callum, feel free to chime in if you have any follow-up questions for any of our guests.
Yeah, good to be here. Yeah, no follow-up questions from me, but just to say it's great to have you all here and great to hear a lot of the work that's going on both in and out of RNIB.
And Callum, do you have any particular plans for how you will be spending Global Accessibility Awareness Day this year?
Yeah, well, obviously I work for BT. I'm no longer in an accessibility role there, but they've got some, my old team have got some really good sessions coming up for developers mainly, but for people across the business as well. You know, they've been really good at putting together some sessions from our internal teams, but also from Apple and Microsoft. So no doubt I'll be listening into those sessions really and trying to see what impact they've had.
And how about you, Sven? Have you got anything lined up for Global Accessibility Awareness Day specifically?
Unfortunately, as an organisation, we don't have anything lined up specifically for Global Awareness Day, but there's always the challenge or like the excitement in my role to make everyone aware of the importance of accessibility non-stop every day. It's something that's always on your agenda and something that's important to flag every time, no matter if I'm speaking internally to someone or to external clients such as public transport operators or building owners. So yes, it's at the heart of what we're doing every day.
Absolutely. I say this every year, accessibility isn't just about a day, it's about every day. Lisa, anything to add to that?
Yeah, so we're going to be celebrating some of the work that we're doing, the stuff I've just talked about in terms of autonomous cane detection. So you might see on our social media channels, we're going to have a little package put together, me talking a little bit about stakeholder engagement and actually listening in order to act on things rather than just sort of ticking a box in terms of saying, yes, we've done a consultation. But also our autonomous driving team about how this then all works in practice. When they hear that there's a problem, how do we actually do something to change that through our internal systems, processes and tech? So we're going to be highlighting a bit of that and then talking about it on our all hands company call on Global Accessibility Awareness Day.
And Robin?
Yeah, Dave, we've got a really exciting campaign at RNIB, which is all about alt text and the importance of describing images, describing scenes, pictures. That'll be quite high profile. Then across the teams, we've got multiple engagements online and in person in terms of celebration with banks, utility companies. I think right across most of the industries we work with, we've got some level of either messaging or video input or webinar that will be taking part in. So, you know, it's a big deal. I think as you highlighted earlier, Dave, you know, accessibility is a journey. And for us, the touch point of Global Accessibility Awareness Day is just about celebrating that and highlighting it and just reminding everyone why accessibility and inclusion is so fundamental, not just to accessibility programs, but to everything that any company does. You know, when thinking in an inclusive mindset, we can make a big difference to the way that people experience our products and services. And of course, it's another opportunity to remind people that if you get it right for blind and partially sighted people, you make it better for everybody.
Now, Global Accessibility Awareness Day has its roots in web accessibility, the virtual world. But over the last 12 months, of course, we've been aware of many developments in terms of accessible technology for making travel and transportation, and even the built environment. I just wonder if each of you would just kind of pick out something that you think has been most impactful over the last year. What does that look like for you, Lisa?
Yeah, I mean, I, you guys will probably know more about this than me, to be honest. I'm an expert in autonomous robots that deliver your shopping. It strikes me, I spend a lot of time with some of the companies who make the larger roadworthy vehicles that are autonomous. And it strikes me that the progress in that sector has potential to be hugely empowering in terms of people's independence and ability to get around. As we all know, the quality of mobility is hugely important. So speaking to some of the companies about how far their autonomy has come, and in the UK especially, there's legislation that's going to underpin the rollout of autonomous vehicles across the UK. I just feel like maybe it's not quite there yet, but there's been a huge amount of progress made on that over the last 12 months or so. And that's going to be a really exciting, empowering development when this becomes a reality day to day on the roads.
Yeah, I know when you and I spoke previously, Lisa, I asked you about regulation. So you feel like there is some movement there now?
Absolutely. It's not quite the stuff that Starship are looking for, because we obviously operate on pavements, and that's a slightly different setup than the big, fast, heavy vehicles that carry passengers. But there is a bill that I think it's just gone through UK Parliament. I think it's just finished, which is the Autonomous Vehicles Bill, which puts in place a nationwide framework to allow autonomous vehicles really to travel on roads, to really start ramping that up and for investments to be put in place for that. So it is incredibly exciting.
And how about for you, Sven, in your world, what change or changes in recent months has really kind of started to make waves, do you think?
I think especially if you look at how AI is changing the world in terms of accessibility and how that now starts to come all together. We were all at CSUN last year, or earlier this year even, and that's where the ARX Vision headset was announced. And just the impact that can have with AI in a headset tied in with, for example, Netherlands codes, with navigation as well, where you don't need to hold your phone anymore, or with just a touch on the button with a headset on your head, you could just be told what is in front of you. The most striking bit for me was, even as a sighted person, you were standing with Stevie Wonder at the stand with where he got the demo with the ARX Vision headset. And at the same moment here on this call where I couldn't come up with his name, I was looking at him like everyone was taking pictures of this guy. And I had no idea who he was. And then the ARX Vision headset was demonstrated, and the ARX Vision with Microsoft Seeing AI told out loud that a person looking like Stevie Wonder was standing in front of him. I was like, this is just amazing, where AI can just tell us immediately what is in front of us. And now you can also use this for wayfinding and navigation with technology that's already around.
Yeah, and there are lots of fun use cases, of course, and lots of practical use cases when it comes to, you know, things like describing images, improving social media access. But just sort of staying with the built environment, Robin Spinks, what for you does success look like when it comes to creating an accessible built environment?
That's a great question, Dave. I think I'd like to see a recognised standard for inclusive design that goes beyond what's in the current building regulations. So something that actually properly embraces all of the simple things that can make a big difference. So material finishes, tonal contrast, light levels, you know, mitigation of glare, lots of things that have cropped up as a result of recent trends in construction. So there's a big trend of, you know, steel and glass or aluminium and glass. And actually we're creating lots of glare in many situations. So I'd love to see some changes to regulations that actually allow us to build more inclusive environments from the outset. I'd also, you know, I'll take the opportunity while I'm here as well to just mention a mainstream tech development that I am super excited about. And that is the advent of genuinely more affordable smart glasses. So I think, you know, in 2023, we saw the launch of the Ray-Ban Metas, you know, and that's a partnership between Ray-Ban and Meta. The thing that's exciting about that is it's resulted in a £300 product, okay? It's not cheap, still relatively expensive, but more affordable. A product that you can put on, you can turn on the device, and ultimately what you can do is ask the device what you're looking at, and it can give you a description. So in the same way that I think the ARX headset is a massive breakthrough for our community, I think there are parallel mainstream developments that are not quite as advanced as the ARX just yet, but we're seeing some incredible progress at more affordable price points. And that coupled with, you know, more inclusive design standards and guidelines for buildings, I think it's the potential of those two things working hand in hand. So more inclusive design regulation and guidance, and people knowing how to do it better from an architectural perspective, but coupled with very smart wearable devices that give people, you know, real-time enabling information and helping them to get around and make the most of the environment. So it's the coming together of those two things, I think, for me, that is super exciting.
And how about you, Sven? What does success look like for you?
Success for me would look like that we as an industry that are responsible for the delivery of open spaces to the public are not thinking about accessibility as an afterthought anymore. And inclusive design is just at the heart of it. And in that way, we don't really need to talk about accessibility anymore, because if an environment is accessible for either blind or partially sighted people with harder hearing or whatever, it brings benefits to the full population. And in that sense, everyone will just get a better space to navigate around.
And Lisa, is it a massive leap of imagination to think that if we make the built environment more accessible for blind and partially sighted people, actually, it probably makes life a little bit easier for your delivery robots?
It absolutely does. Yeah, we were allies in this one, definitely. Because that's quite right, is that if it's accessible for people, it'll be accessible for robots too. But I think just like on that, there is a huge potential, isn't there? Because housing and community development is going to be a big focus of the next government, if the government goes the way the polls are showing that it looks likely at the moment. And, you know, the Labour Party are promising to build new towns. So this idea of an inclusive design standard actually is really interesting, isn't it? Because all of a sudden you might end up with new towns built. And how does that all fit together? That's quite an exciting prospect, because we all know how hard it is in terms of some of the older infrastructure. Robots struggle as much as people in some of the areas where, you know, narrow pathways and or no pavements at all, no dropped curbs, that kind of thing. The idea of the new towns and new infrastructure being built, I think, is exciting for everyone.
I'll stay with you, Lisa, if you don't mind. What do you perceive as being some of the biggest challenges, some of the barriers that we face in getting some of this emerging technology fully inclusive by design and you know, obviously by extension the environment? What are the blockers? What are the things that are frustrating you? What's holding you up at the moment?
Well, I think, you know, to come back to regulation, that's always the most frustrating thing for us, because there is an autonomous vehicles bill, and we've not been in sort of our space that we operate in hasn't really been included in it. So for us, we try and do things right. We have put accessibility at the heart of what we do, and it isn't an add-on. It's kind of what we do as part of our engineering priorities now. Our worry would be, without regulation, if companies come along that don't give that level of priority to accessibility and inclusion and operating well, it could be a big setback for the whole sector if something were to go wrong. So I think the biggest barrier in terms of sensitively introducing tech is, one, companies making sure that it is a priority, and two, government regulating to make sure that even if companies don't want to make it a priority, they have to.
Okay. And how about you, Sven? What are the challenges that you're facing?
I think it's quite similar to what Lisa describes. But besides that, what we see is that everyone is active with accessibility and everyone wants to do something and they know they have to do something as well. But it all stays at the moment as trialing new technology out and not thinking about, okay, or at least getting the funding or approvals to really implement something permanently and make the benefits that you see during the trial phase permanent. And then, of course, the other challenges, luckily not for us, but what you sometimes see in the industry is that because accessibility sometimes is an afterthought, it's not at the heart of the design. So this morning I was in a meeting and someone was telling me that the company implemented Braille in their environment. And the moment you touch the sign that they made, it read out to you, "Do not touch hot surface." So sometimes you wonder, are that really the best places to put your Braille sign on those kind of signs as well?
Oh, Sven, do you know, that resonates with me so much because I know a lot of Braille signs get put at eye level and you don't read Braille with your eyes, you read it with your fingers. So I'm always trying to advocate for people to put Braille signage at hand level, you know, near door handles and switches and that sort of thing.
We have seen a company implementing it on their logo, and the logo was located behind a reception desk. So you might wonder who will ever touch that sign as well.
I've got to climb on the desk and feel the logo. Robin, then, let's start to look ahead then. What can we expect in the next year? What will we be talking about next Global Accessibility Awareness Day?
Well, I hope more progress, Dave, across AI, across robotics, machine learning, scene detection. We're seeing a lot of emerging technologies in the navigational space. I think that's really hotting up. So it's gone from Bluetooth to BodyCode to LiDAR to new emerging solutions. And I think, you know, just picking up on what Sven said as well, and Lisa also, I'd like to see this embedded into the way that companies and organizations think about planning. So when you think about service planning, you think about customer experience, I want to see more embedding of inclusive design in that process. And a really good example would be accessible kiosks. So I hope a year from today, when we're talking, that we're talking about many, many examples of fully accessible kiosks in public places, doctor's surgeries, cinemas, transport interchanges. If you're blind or partially sighted, you then need to go and seek help to use those devices. And that needn't be the case. There's an accessible solution now available, and we're working with partners to make that happen. So there's one example that I'd really like to see a year from now, big progress on, and just greater embedding of inclusion as a business principle across the board.
And how about you, Sven? What are you hoping for in the next 12 months?
I really hope that people are going to be dedicated to bring this part of the fundamentals of their organization. And not just of, we will trial something because it's a hot topic at the moment and we want to do something with accessibility, but make this a permanent thing into the way of working.
And Lisa?
I think the cane detection piece that we talked about earlier, we've got to nail that. We've got to get that done. And then for Starship, it'll be sort of a case of, well, what's next? Because we don't do a thing, then stop. We do a thing, then find another thing to do. So it will be talking to our accessibility advisory panel and saying, okay, we've looked at mobility devices, we've looked at cane, we've done some guide dog training. What's next, guys? So for us, we'll kind of be led by the community on that one to see what the priorities need to be. But I think broadly across the whole sector, what I'd love to see is that increase in social acceptance and a normalisation of embodied AI and tech generally in a way that is accessible.
And you've already touched on this, a big thing that I hear from listeners is, you know, nothing about us without us. That's the mantra in disability circles. And I know that you have working groups and advisory panels that you engage with to make sure that you centre the voices of blind and partially sighted people and other disabilities as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's kind of, we say about all of our stakeholder and community engagement is we do things with people, not to people. And it is hugely important because we don't have people on our team who's doing the engineering, who are doing the computer vision, the autonomous driving, who have that lived experience. So what might just seem as an easy thing or not a problem to somebody who doesn't have that lived experience, we know from doing this work that things just don't match. You've got to really root what you're doing in real life. And that's, you know what, that's been hugely important to us, and not even just in doing the right thing and being accessible and making sure there's a level of equality, but it's made us better as an organization. It's made our product better in kind of the same way we were talking, I think it was Robin talking about, if a community is accessible for people who are partially sighted or have sight loss, it's probably good for everybody else too. That's kind of the same thing here. If our robot works really well for people who are partially sighted or using canes, then it's probably better for everybody else as well. So it's just making the whole thing much more well-rounded, to be honest.
And Sven, how important is centering that lived experience in your work? How engaged are you with the disability community?
Yeah, I can only echo Lisa in that sense. It's the same way our designers, our developers, they're not partially sighted, they're not blind, with hearing impaired, they're not British Sign Language users. And they face the challenges themselves when they are designing a product. They're like, okay, but how should we present this to British Sign Language users? What is intuitive to them? And how can we optimize our products and services in a way that it's not only beneficial for British Sign Language users, but also other user group can access easily station announcements or live journey information. And in that sense, the only way for us to do that is with organizations such as the RNIB, or in this case, the RNID, who have access to people with lived experience to give us feedback on how we can improve our products and services that works best for these type of user groups. And in that way, we improve our products and services for everyone.
Robin, finally from you, how do we at RNIB enable blind and partially sighted people to really become leaders in some of these fields and work in design and technology and really shape the future of accessible and inclusive technology?
I think that journey continues, Dave, with the communication around inclusive design and making sure that we can reach as many channels as possible. So, you know, Royal College of Art, universities across the country. But above all, blind and partially sighted people, one of the first things I would say is that we want to hear about good and bad examples of design from people. So, you know, you can email helpline@rnib.org.uk. You can use the helpline phone number, 0303-123-9999. We want communication from people, and let's get a dialogue going. We also want companies to reach out. Lots of them do already, but we'd like to hear from more, just to really invest and upscale on accessibility. And let's get the leadership issue on the table of the companies we're working in as well. And ask yourselves how many people in your company are blind or partially sighted or disabled. And if it's not a high number, which I suspect it's not, how can we increase it? So how can we do the kind of things that Lisa talked about, having an inclusion and advisory board for the company, getting it on the boardroom table, getting decision makers thinking about and acting upon the recommendations for change. So it's multiple strands. And you know what? It's about putting momentum behind it. Let's get weight behind this. Let's get people on board, get a dialogue going and moving things forward.
And Sven, how can people find out more about Go Media?
So the best way to follow things around Go Media is to go to our LinkedIn page. So you'll find us on LinkedIn on Go Media Services Limited.
Excellent. Okay. And Lisa, Starship Technologies?
Yep, you can go to starship.co, which is our website. It is getting a complete revamp as we speak. So it is going to be wonderfully accessible when we finish.
Excellent.
But also just look us up on our social media channels at Starship Robots.
Excellent. Robin Spinks, Sven Costa and Lisa Johnson, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, folks. Good to chat.
Thanks all.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've heard from Ryan via email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk, and Ryan lets us know about a problem he was experiencing with the Victor 3 Daisy player from Humanware. And Ryan says that there was an issue where if you had a large folder, the device would become very sluggish, but there is an update patch available. So if you're experiencing that problem, do contact Humanware. Thanks, Ryan, for flagging that. Ricky has been in touch and tells us about Torchit's Sarthi, I hope we're pronouncing that correctly, which is an obstacle detection device. But Ricky points out that it's very difficult to hear the haptics in the YouTube video. Does anybody know about this one? Callum, Huber, have you heard of this product?
I haven't heard of it, to be honest, but we will look into that because it does sound like an interesting one. There's a lot of these about now, isn't there? These obstacle detection devices. I know the Mini Guide was very popular. The Sunu Band, which is sadly no more, I believe. But yeah, this sounds like another one to add to the list. We'll investigate.
Yeah, and there's Ray, isn't there, from CareTech, which feels a little bit like a small torch, and that provides haptic feedback as well. Yeah. It's difficult to demo these on audio, though, isn't it? You know, because if they're not making a sound and they're just sort of doing a haptic vibration, you need somebody who's pretty good at describing what's going on there. So I definitely appreciate what you're saying there, Ricky. And it's a new one on us, so we're keen to learn more as well. But thank you so much for getting in touch. Our old friend Derry Lawler has been in contact with Tech Talk about the Ring Video doorbell, which I believe you, Callum Stoneman, have. And Derry says he's not loving the app. Have you got any tips for him there, Callum?
Not really, to be honest. The app is tricky at the minute. It seems to have gone downhill over the last few months, really, unfortunately. I have reported some of the issues to Ring. To be honest, the app itself overall is actually okay. It's just when you're on the live stream of the doorbell and trying to answer the door that I find it's just really difficult. It's just really inconsistent. Voiceover speech kind of disappears. And as we heard a couple of weeks ago, I have switched now to the Google Nest doorbell. And I didn't switch purely on accessibility. I switched because we were having other issues as well. But I mean, this is like what we were saying about Sonos earlier. You know, if say a news app or your podcast app suddenly becomes inaccessible overnight, then that's frustrating, obviously, and it's not good enough. But there's other places you can get podcasts, there's other places you can get news. But for things like this, I mean, for an app that's for hardware that you've got, you know, these are hardware devices that you control and expensive devices as well. You know, these are not cheap, and it doesn't take much for them to become unusable.
Derry goes on to say that he's got a solar panel for charging his Ring Video doorbell and uses Be My Eyes to recognise when the various lights are lit up and to get the charge status. Is that something you've done, Callum?
Ah, that's a good tip, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah, because there's lights on the battery when you're charging it up. Because, that was another thing. I couldn't really find a way to tell whether the battery was charged other than putting it back in the doorbell and checking the battery level.
Mm.
So yeah, that's a good tip, actually. Yeah, take a picture of it, get to Be My Eyes to tell you the lights if it can do.
I don't know if Derry's got a bit of kind of buyer's remorse, because he also says that the Google Home doorbell does sound like it might be better.
Yeah, I mean, I've found it to be certainly better in terms of accessibility and stability, but it depends. It depends on your setup and, you know, if you've got it wired or wireless and just the style of it, I guess. Does it fit in with your environment? Yeah, it depends. The best tip that I've got, to be honest, is if you've got an Alexa device, then you can answer the door via that. So you can just say, talk to the front door or answer the front door or whatever the name of your doorbell is. But obviously, that's not much help out and about.
Well, there we are. Okay, well, Derry, do keep us posted. Let us know how you're getting on with that app. And I trust you have reported any accessibility issues that you have encountered. Always good to hear from you. And we've also heard from Steve this week, who says that he was listening to Tech Talk recently when we were talking about the fact that Outlook is changing, and we were exploring potential accessible alternatives. And Steve would like to share Betterbird, which is based on Thunderbird as an alternative email client. Hubert, are you familiar with Betterbird?
No, actually, I have not heard of this, but having had my own frustrations with Thunderbird, granted it was a while back, I'm glad to hear there's an alternative, to be fair, because I do quite like the Outlook app myself, but yes, it's obviously important to have the alternatives, bearing in mind the news we've talked about a few weeks ago. So yes, it's an interesting one. I'm certainly glad to see that is an alternative, because Thunderbird I found okay, but there was a few frustrations, so it'll be interesting to see how Betterbird tackles them.
Yeah, he says he's tried it and he likes it, except for the search, which he says it's a bit of a strange interface. But he doesn't think the search is quite as quick as that in Outlook, but does share a web address, which is www.betterbird.eu. Thank you very much for that, Steve. Orcam is a familiar name in the world of assistive technology that has been with us for some time now. But I don't know about you, I sometimes get a little bit lost figuring out which would be the right Orcam product for me. Well, here to help us understand a little bit more about Orcam and navigate the range and also share some opportunities to get some hands-on with Orcam is Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life team. Welcome back into Tech Talk, Louise. Just before we talk about those opportunities to experience Orcam for yourself, just give us a bit of a high-level overview. What is Orcam? What does Orcam do for us as blind or partially sighted people?
So Orcam is used to do text-to-speech. So it has built-in camera and uses AI technology to read the text.
Right. So this is a highly portable, self-contained system for recognizing
yes.
text.
Exactly.
Doesn't just do text, though, does it? It recognizes other things as well.
Yes, so RNIB have three Orcam products on the market. So we've got the Orcam Read Smart, the Orcam My Eye Pro, and the Orcam My Eye Smart.
Okay,
so three
and they all kind of do sort of slightly similar things, but slightly different at the same time. Yeah,
exactly.
And they don't require, you don't have to use a phone. So this is the point. These are standalone, self-contained systems. Yeah,
standalone, self-contained, and you do not need Wi-Fi if you're someone who doesn't have Wi-Fi at home. RNIB's bestseller would be the Orcam Read Smart. Very simple. It's like a broad marker. You can put it in the palm of your hand.
Like a pen.
Like a pen. Yep.
Yeah.
It's got four large tactile buttons, so it's easy to use, and it can pick up text from size 4, which is minute size print. So if you get your bank statements in, it can capture the A4 page and it will read out the bank statement. Now, if you're familiar with the bank statement, it'll be different columns, so it can navigate around the page. Equally, if you're going out for dinner, it will read the menu. You can use it to identify the banknotes at the end of the meal, so you can pay for the meal, and it can be used to identify some barcodes as well.
Yeah, and lots of other use cases, like you know, reading your post or other documents. Just talk us through how you use it then. How close to the piece of paper or the thing that you want to read does the pen need to be?
So depending on the size, if you have an A4 page and you put it in front of you, whenever I'm demonstrating it, I always tend to put the pen in the middle of the page and then lift it up and press the capture button, and it will read out what's on the page. But equally, it will tell you if it's missed text. It will sort of guide you around what you've missed.
Okay, so you do that, because I do something similar with my phone, but obviously I'm eating into my phone battery life with that. And I guess in some ways, holding something like a pen maybe feels a little bit more natural in the hand.
Yeah, it does. I'm familiar with two of the devices, but I know that the Read Smart is the best-selling device from RNIB, and I think that's probably why it is simple to use.
Okay, so you mentioned text, so it's going to read documents and more complex documents to give you some yes. guidance about getting the best possible picture with that. You said barcodes as well, mm-hmm. some barcodes?
Yep, if you want to identify your beans from your peas, it can be used to identify your tins as well.
Mm-hmm.
Equally, it can do for digital screens. So if you're at an airport, if someone's with you or if you need just to check the departures or the arrivals, you can actually point and it will read what's on the screen as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. So displays in the built environment. And I mean, what about the displays around the home? Would it be helpful for, I don't know, maybe you've got an inaccessible, I don't know, thermostat or, an appliance that has a screen on it. Would it read those kinds of screens as well?
I'm aware it does digital screens. So as long as the screen is digital, it should be able to read what's on the screen.
Brilliant. Okay. And so that is the Read Smart, the Orcam Read Smart.
Yes.
And it's got, as you mentioned, tactile buttons on there as well. So you can feel the buttons that you need to press in order to control the device. Excellent. Right. Well, I'm sure there will be lots of questions about that one, but there are two other Orcam products in the range. Just tell us a bit about those.
So we have the Orcam MyEye Pro. So the Orcam MyEye Pro, it's hands-free. It's a pair of glasses that you wear, and the device uses commands, voice commands, to get to read. So you can point and it will capture.
Okay.
So it'll capture what you want it to read. You can also do checking the time. You can also use it to program faces and identification. So if you're studying, you can program the people who are coming in so you can identify who's coming into the room. It'll tell you, Dave.
Excellent. Okay. So the MyEye Pro, just to kind of compare it with the Read Smart, this is a pair of glasses essentially that you wear, so it's hands free.
Yes.
So
hands free.
If you've got one hand that's occupied with a mobility aid like a cane or a guide dog or something like that, then this may make more sense for you.
Yeah, and I suppose too, if you're studying as well, if you're in a study lecture room, it means you're hands free, you can still take notes while listening to what's being read out to you as well.
But what if you already wear glasses? I mean, I know you, Louise, you use some glasses yourself.
Yes.
So what if somebody does already use glasses? What should they do in that situation?
So in that case, we have the Orcam MyEye Smart. So the Orcam MyEye Smart is a mountable device that you mount magnetically to your own glasses. Now, it doesn't do the facial recognition or colour recognition, but it will do the same with the text to speech. It has all the same built-in features with the AI camera and AI technology and camera.
Okay, so the Read Smart, the MyEye Pro for if you don't use glasses, and then the MyEye Smart for people who already use glasses. So quite a bit to unpack there, and obviously this is significant, in terms of an investment or a funded purchase and a decision that you would want to make very carefully to make sure that this was the right product for you. And that's why we are working with Orcam to put on a couple of events in Northern Ireland where blind or partially sighted people can come along and try Orcam for themselves. Just tell us a bit more about those events.
Yeah, so upcoming Wednesday the 5th of June in Cookstown, and another event on Thursday the 6th of June in Newry. Now both those events will be in the local libraries, and to attend that it's an appointment basis, so we don't want to have any disappointment with people arriving and we're busy with other people, so it is on an appointment basis.
Okay, and how do we make an appointment?
Okay, so to make an appointment, we simply have to email ian.white@orcam.com, or you can phone Ian directly on 020-397-7298.
Okay, do you want to just give us those contact details one more time?
Yep, email address is ian.white@orcam.com, or by telephone 020-397-7298.
Right. And so we've got these events in Northern Ireland on the 5th and 6th of June by appointment, so you can try out any of the Orkan products that we've talked about. What about folk who live in other parts of the UK, Louise?
Yes, so if you're not able to attend an event in Northern Ireland, you can also book an appointment with your products for Life Store. We have one in Belfast, Edinburgh and London. To book an appointment, if you're online, you can do that through our shop.rnab.org website. Or if you're not online, you can book by phoning the helpline, which is 0303 123 9999.
Okay, so if you want to make an appointment, you can visit the RNIB shop online or call the helpline. Well, Louise, that's been fantastic. Thank you so much for your help, and we look forward to hearing from listeners about which, if any, of the Orkan products is going to work well for them. But I definitely think, you know, with these sort of higher end assistive technology products, it's really important that we, as blind or partially sighted people, get the opportunity to take them for a test drive to really make sure that it's going to work well for us.
Indeed.
All right. Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life team, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your company. We are at the end of another Tech Talk. If you have any thoughts about anything you've heard on the programme or a suggestion for something we should include in a future week, then do drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. From myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavarkovich, until next time, bye for now.
See you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.